if something's really that important to you, then you're going to save and you're going to make that happen. You're going to go add value to somebody, you know, go get a second job. You're going to go do something to make that happen, because if it's that important, you're not going to stop at anything to make it happen.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Javier Hinojo, your host of The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. And today I have Tim Lyons. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did.
All right, perfect. Like, it can't be that hard. Let's try to tell people, hey, pronounce my last name. And if you get it right, I'll give you a bonus at the end of the show. But hey, I actually had a chance to meet him about 30 days ago at a Jake and Gino multifamily event in Orlando, which there was about 9 billion people there. It was pretty insane. Like, it was great. A lot of handshakes, a lot of connections. And we were just chatting about a lot of follow-ups that we had to do. But I'm very excited to have him here. He used to be a firefighter. By the way, my brother-in-law is a firefighter in Texas. He's been one for about 10 years. So hats off to all the folks out there, first responders. So appreciate that. And just kind of tell us a bit about your history. I know you bought some apartment building, a general partner. You've been a limited partner. You started a few years ago. I'm not sure. I don't know if you already moved on from the fire department. You're still there, but I'll let you kind of tell your story.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate the intro. And yeah, that Jake and Gino event was something else. 900 people, my first event because of COVID. And that was just insane. So I highly recommend Multifamily Mastery with Jake and Gino for 2022. If you haven't gone to any events, that's a good one to start. But yeah, so my story, I mean, look, we all have a story with real estate, and mine is a little bit unique, I guess, because of the firefighting thing. But, you know, I was a guy, I'm still a New York City firefighter. I work as a lieutenant in the borough of Queens. I've been doing this for, you know, about 16 and a half years at this point. And it was a lifelong dream to be a New York City firefighter. I was given a police scanner by Santa Claus as a present one year when I was 8 years old. And I attached that scanner to my bike. I had a little holster for it. And I used to like ride around town chasing the fire engines. And, you know, it's something I could never shake. I always wanted to be a fireman. Growing up right in the New York City area, I knew a lot of people who were firemen and whatever. And then my uncle was a captain in the New York City Fire Department and was actually crushed on the Tower 2 and on 9/11. And fortunately, he's still with us today. Crazy recovery. But I think right after that, I decided that no matter what, I was in college at the time. I said I wanted to be a New York City firefighter. And that's what I did. So fast forward, been doing it 16 years. I love it. Still have a giant smile on my face when I'm going into work. And, you know, I think, you know, having that in my background has kind of shaped my journey and the real estate, you know, career that I've kind of gotten into. So really, you know, as a firefighter, a lot of firefighters have a second job or even a third job, and they really run the gamut. I mean, there's bartenders up to small business owners to nurses, PAs. We even had a dentist. I mean, it's really incredible what guys do.
What's the most common? What's the most common? Like, what do you think? Because you're like a landscaper, handyman.
A lot of those.
A nurse, EMT. No. What's the most common?
Yeah, EMTs maybe, but really, I mean, contractors. I would say any sort of contractor, you know, because the schedule is such that, you know, you work a 24-hour shift and then you have, you know, a couple of days off and then you do another 24 and another couple of days off. So it's really conducive to kind of, you know, doing projects like that. So, but I didn't know that. I got to the firehouse and everybody had a side job. So I was, I like to joke around that I was pre-med for about 15 minutes in college until I joined a fraternity. And so I really had a passion for medicine. I was an EMT in high school. And when I got to the firehouse, a couple of guys were nurses, you know, and they had the nice cars and their wives didn't work and they always had side work whenever they wanted it. So I got talked into going to nursing school, you know, so was working full time at the firehouse. By that time I was married. I was expecting my first child and I'm going to nursing school full time. It was a little bit crazy, but, you know, but that's what I did. So I had two W-2 jobs. I ended up working in an emergency room. And I loved it. You know, it was between the firehouse and the emergency room. I just had nonstop action. I had the ability to really have like a purpose for my career and be fulfilled. And everything was great. You know, listen, the bills were getting paid. I was putting money into the retirement accounts. We took some vacations every year. But what wasn't great was the trading of my time for money. You know, people call it the W-2 grind or the rat race, or whatever you might have a term for it. But I was, you know, I was always a hard worker. I always put the hours in. I don't mind going to work. But, you know, one kid became two, became three little girls in my house. Right now they're 10, 8, and 2. And, you know, when they were small, they didn't really say anything when I worked a lot because, you know, they, I guess they didn't know better. I obviously felt terrible working nights and holidays and weekends and missing games or, you know, whatever. I'm sure I missed a couple of first, you know, steps. And it began to wear on me. It began to wear on my wife, and especially as my kids got a little older and they could verbalize and cry and, "Daddy, where are you going? You just got home. How, you know, you're not going to be home for two more days. Oh my God," you know? So, you know, and I had gotten to the point beside that, I had gotten to the point where, yes, I still absolutely love being a New York City firefighter, but I also felt like there was something more that I should be doing. You know, I had an urge and a want to be, do, and have more in my life on top of being a New York City firefighter, which is an interesting kind of concept for if you're not a first responder or if you're not a firefighter, it might be hard to wrap your head around, you know, because so much of, you know, what we are and who we think about ourselves is wrapped into our profession. And, you know, yes, I have benefits and a pension to look forward to. And on the outside looking in, you'd be like, "Tim, why are you not happy?" And it wasn't that I wasn't happy. I just felt like there was more, you know, and I was always involved, or I should say interested in real estate and finance and personal finance. I was always educating myself and reading the Wall Street Journal and, you know, listening to podcasts. And real estate just seemed unattainable to me. You know, it seemed like one of those things that I would get into someday. You know, someday I'll do this and someday I'll do that. And now that I've kind of been on this journey, I know that there's a term for that. And it's called like the arrival fallacy or the destination fallacy, because really it's a fallacy. If you don't take that action and you just keep on thinking about it and you get stuck, nothing's ever going to change, right? So, you know, once I really kind of got clear on what it was that I was searching for, what it was that I wanted to do, what did I want my life to look like? And it sounds cliche. It sounds a little bit woo-woo, right? It sounds like every self-help book you've kind of read out there or heard a podcast on. But, you know, if I didn't have any clarity around what direction I wanted my family's life and my own personal life and my career to go in, I wouldn't have been able to get to the point where I am today. So let's fast forward, right? I'm sitting on a beach, summer of 19, and I'm reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, which is a book that has literally changed, you know, I don't even know, countless lives, right?
Yep.
And a lot of real estate investors talk about this book. They call it the purple book or the, you know, and really it's a mindset about investing. It's more of the ideation of real estate investing, having your assets pay for your liabilities. And then his next book, The Cash Flow Quadrant, really is like the tactical, how do you put that idea into operation, right? So I read those two books and I remember telling my wife on the beach vacation, I'm trying to like build sandcastles with one hand, keep the book in the other, you know, I couldn't put it down. And I said, "I'm going to be a real estate investor," you know? And she was like, "Yeah, all right, Tim, sure," you know? And my wife's great. She's always supported me no matter what I wanted to do. And 4 months later, I'm buying my first three family rental property. So I went from, you know, not having any clear idea to really getting clear, to reading the book, and then 4 months later, taking that action, coming out of my comfort zone, you know, smashing the limiting belief, whatever you want to say about it, but taking the action made all the difference. And before I go any further, I'll throw it back to you to see if you want to unpack any of that.
Yeah, okay. Let's just start from the very beginning. No, I'm just kidding. No. I want to go to the beginning. I got a couple of questions, which is awesome because, you know, it's not easy going to college and graduating, getting a degree. It's not easy going to, you know, if I want to go be a New York firefighter, New York City firefighter, or just anywhere firefighter in general. I mean, what's the success rate, right, of anybody that goes through the class? It's a lot of training. You know, most people quit or they just can't make it. So, you know, you had a lot of time and energy and, you know, you had a career going, right? So at every point it gets to the, like you said, hey, there was a point where I was just ready for more, right? Mm-hmm. What do you see the difference from like wanting more and possibly, you know, you work so hard for your career saying, okay, do what? You're still a firefighter, right? But at some point, you're going to let that go. How do you make that? Was that a challenge for you? Or how was that kind of thought process going from like, hey, I know I'm working really hard and I'm still doing a great job where I'm at now, but I got to do something else. Like, what was, like, what do you see
there's, as far as
like any doubts or anything that comes to mind, like anything?
Absolutely. I mean, I could write a book on limiting beliefs, right? I mean, So having a college degree, and college, as you know, it's not cheap, right? So there was a lot of time and resources put into that college degree. And 2 weeks later, I graduated college. I'm a New York City firefighter, where I only really needed 30 credits. Now I have 120 something, and I only needed 30 to get on the job, you know? So like, that was like a little bit of like a mindset thing, like, oh my God, like, what did I just do? Did I just waste my time and waste my money and my parents' money and resources? And, you know, so now I'm going down this little journey, and now I'm going to be a nurse, right? So I go back to school, and this time I'm paying for it 100% by myself. And I just got married, right? So I am now going back to school. It took me 3 years to finish the nursing degree. And during that time, I had my first child, and I bought my first house, and I'm working full time. And it was like really crazy, right? So I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that college degree, that second college degree. And I go out and I use it for about 9 years. And I'm at this crossroads where I want to be doing have more. And it wasn't in the W-2 world. It was going to be in real estate, right? Because, you know, after getting financially educated, you know, I realized that I can't save my way to wealth. You know, I was a prolific saver because I grew up from humble beginnings, and I didn't understand debt and leverage and, you know, how to use that to your advantage at the time. So there was a whole mindset shift. But once I realized that no one was coming to save me, you know, that I was kind of doing the traditional route of going to school, getting a good job, you know, contributing to my IRAs and everything, and that, you know, someday I'd be able to enjoy life, that wasn't good enough for me, right? So I'm in this rat race, and I'm like, am I really going to retire from the hospital after 9 years, after going through what I went through with the getting the second degree and doing all that? I mean, not having a clear blueprint of what was going to come next, and we're like, was I going to be successful? And am I making a huge mistake? And oh, by the way, I paid 20 grand for coaching to do it all again with no guarantee of future payment or profit was a huge mindset shift. And it really, you know, again, through my journey, I now know there's a term for that called the scarcity mindset versus the abundance mindset, or that growth mindset. And when I really started getting all these things, you know, getting educated and taking in content and audiobooks and podcasts and reading books, everything kind of came together at the right time. You know, so that's what I did. Literally, like March 1st, I joined a coaching program, a mentorship for multifamily, and of 2020, March 1st of 2020. And I resigned from the hospital, right? And as you know, March 1st of 2020, you know, we were just about to have COVID pummel our country, right? So I resigned from the hospital. I'm already, I have my pencils sharpened. I'm going to do all this work in this new program, getting educated, going through the modules. I'm fired up. My plan was to work while my two big girls were in school. And then all of a sudden, 2.5, 3 weeks later, COVID's here. Everything's shut down. We're, you know, flattening the curve for 2 weeks, right? Hashtag flatten the curve. You know, my kids are home from school, Google Classroom, working from home. It's, everything's a disaster. And oh, by the way, I just paid 20 grand for coaching, you know, and I'm like, holy cow, like, what did I just do? What happened? You know, and anybody else might have just like flipped out. Like, this is a terrible time to get into real estate. There's eviction moratoriums. There's the economy just collapsed. The stock market went down by 35% in a matter of days. And I work in a very poor neighborhood with a lot of immigrants in New York City. And we got hit especially hard with COVID. So right towards the end of March, you know, I'm a lieutenant of this engine company in Queens, and, you know, there's people on top of people on top of people, and a lot of immigrants. So maybe there's not access to healthcare like there should have been. So, you know, if you watch the news, the world, you know, news, Corona Queens, Elmhurst, Queens was the epicenter of Corona in our country, right? There was refrigerated trucks outside of every emergency room with dead bodies in them. We did CPR nonstop for 24 hours at a time, and nobody was making it. And at the time, I just joined this program. And now I come home from work, and my wife and I are like, is it safe for me to even be around the house? Because I have a brand new baby at home. We don't, at the time, we didn't know much about Corona. You know, everyone's scared, right? Not a lot of information. So I ended up moving out of my house for almost 9 weeks or 8 weeks. And my mother-in-law, I moved into my mother-in-law's house. She moved into my house, and I had no physical contact with my family for 8 weeks, almost 9 weeks. And during that time was the time that I really turned up my multifamily education, worked on my mindset, personal growth, because I really could have shut down and been like, this sucks, and put on some Netflix and just felt sorry for myself. But I didn't, right? I just went to the education module, started calling brokers, started underwriting deals, started calling lenders. People thought I was crazy. And I always talk now that I wish I could have recorded some of those phone calls during COVID. Like, hey, my name is Tim and I'm a brand new investor and I just wanted to introduce myself to you. And they're like, dude, we've been out of the office for 2 weeks, like for a month. You're like, you know, we're not doing any real estate deals. And I'm like, I know, you know, I just wanted to introduce myself to you. But because I was getting those reps in, I was increasing my confidence. I was increasing my knowledge base. And I was getting up at 5 a.m, go to bed at midnight. And I was just working the entire time I was quarantined. So with that being said, that was basically the beginning of Cityside Capital. And that was the beginning of moving from the 3-family that we owned to getting into larger deals.
Yeah. So Cityside Capital, this should have been at the beginning of the show, but you got about $280 million of co-sponsorship, right? On apartment buildings, about 1,700 units. And you've actually invested over 250 units passively as a limited partner. Should have probably let off of that. That, which is very impressive for, you know, this, you know, less than 2 years, you know, journey that you're on. And for everybody out there who's on the fence saying, hey, should I do this? Should I not do this? Should I pay for a coaching program? I mean, you know, I got a career, I got a job, etc. Just listen to Tim's story, right? He started right at the beginning of COVID. You know, he paid for the coaching. He had to be away from his family in New York where COVID was going. It was all over the world. Like, it was the news. I remember watching the Times Square sidewalks and like nobody's there. It's like a ghost town. I was like, wow. It was like, it was just surreal. Just looking at, you know, and I don't even live there. I can't imagine the people that would look out their window and always see people there and just dead. Nobody's there. Like, just quiet. So there's really no excuse. You got to go out there and take action. So Tim said he first changed his mindset. And then number two, you know, he took some action. Well, changed his mindset, got some coaching, and then, you know, took some action. So that's kind of in the road, the way he did it, which is great because that's what I have in the back of my t-shirt all the time, right? Like, first change the way you think, right? Network, get some coaching, do something, get around people who want to do what you want to do.
Yes.
And then you actually got to go take some action. I mean, I can't imagine how it was for your family and everybody. And for us that are married or have a spouse or a partner, what advice do you tell them, right? When you're trying to get your spouse on board, you know, you have some spouses, some partners that are pretty supportive, but just in general, right? What would you say to tell a spouse?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really, I mean, so for, I can speak to myself and my wife, Christina. She knows my work ethic. I had known Christina since we were in college. So it's been at least 20 years since we know each other. She knows that I'm an incredibly hard worker. I'm super dedicated to our family. I'm also very cheap, you know, and I'm very money conscious. So at the end of the day, when I came to her with the idea of investing in real estate, she's like, great, let's find out a way to do it. You know, and even though we had money in the bank, it felt like, you know, because we didn't know how to get started or we didn't know the rules of the game, that's why real estate felt risky, right? You know, and that's kind of like where the education piece came in. So when I approached Christina and said, look, you know, there's a cost associated with getting around the people that are doing the thing that we want to do, getting around the successful people and learning from them and being in a mastermind with them and being associated with them and having a coach to call and a mentor to kind of be, you know, hold you accountable. It was hard for us to kind of wrap our heads around that in the beginning because, you know, we're saying to ourselves like, all right, so we have money saved. We have a 3-family. It's cash flowing. We obviously know the power of real estate. Are we really going to pay that much money for a mentorship program? And what's the return on investment going to be? And, you know, what if it doesn't work? Or what if we don't like it? Or, you know, and there was all these crazy beliefs. You know, I think we all have them, right? I mean, I think we all have them. And, you know, when we made the decision, you know, because Christina wanted no part of the real estate business. We have 3 little girls. She has her own private practice. She's a social worker. She had her plate kind of full. And, you know, we had to make a decision. Are we going to do it? And am I going to be committed to it? And believe me, if you know how cheap I am, or frugal, I should say, if I'm going to pay money for something like that, believe me, I'm going to be on every call. I'm going to be on everything possible. And I'm going to soak up every piece of knowledge because now I'm super accountable. And I think because of that, that really propelled us forward. But really kind of getting your spouse on board requires, you know, getting clear on what your goals are and what your spouse's goals are, you know, and then together, what are the family's goals and how do you get there? Yep. And you might say, all right, well, Tim, sounds like you had the money in the bank and I don't have that money in the bank. Well, guess what? if something's really that important to you, then you're going to save and you're going to make that happen. You're going to go add value to somebody, you know, go get a second job. You're going to go do something to make that happen, because if it's that important, you're not going to stop at anything to make it happen. So does that answer the question?
Yeah, it definitely does. Definitely does. It's one of the biggest things, you know, anything you do, any new career change, real estate, you know, it can be challenging. And if you don't have the support of your partner, your spouse, you know, it's going to be a lot harder. You know, just lead the way, right? Just show the way, be consistent, and they'll come around. It could be an issue. You know, it's very, very important, because you have two different worlds, right? You got two different people in the same house living together with two different thoughts, different backgrounds, different ways of thinking, that you got to come together, have a life together. Not just that, but now let's start another journey and another business, right? So I think that's very, very important. I got a couple more questions. Then I'm going to go to the best part of the show. What would you say was the biggest mistake when you jumped into investing that you made?
The biggest mistake, I would say, number one, is not going right into multifamily from the get-go. It would be number one. And that's more of like a big picture mistake. Mistake might be a too harsh of a word, but maybe like a missed opportunity. You know, I think a lot of people in my shoes, or people like me and like you, you know, we want to start off small, right? All right, yeah, we want to do real estate. So let's go do a single family or a condo or a duplex, triplex. And then maybe we'll do a couple of those. And then we're going to manage them ourselves. And we're going to do everything ourselves. And then maybe one day we'll 1031 that whole portfolio into a big building, you know? And by that time, I should know what I'm doing with multifamily. But because multifamily seems like a pie in the sky, multifamily seems hard, cap rates, spreadsheets, net operating income, above the line, below the line, expenses, P&Ls, T12s. Like, you know, you hear all this stuff and you're like, man, like, I feel like I'm getting punched in the face. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Once you learn the language and the rules of the game, it's just rinse and repeat after that. But you have to be educated to make the right decisions, right? And I went down that route. I got myself a little bit educated, right? I read some books, took in some content, some podcasts, talked to some people, and I did the three family. That felt safe. That felt, you know, like
comfort zone.
Yeah, it was comfort, you know, but you know, you don't grow unless you're outside of your comfort zone, right? Yeah. So that's why I quickly, and people will say, like, Tim, how did you go from three units to like 3,000, 2,000, whatever? And I'm like, well, because like the three unit was great, but that was average. And that was, it was moving the needle a little bit. And I could have stayed in the three family space for the rest of my life. And I probably could have made a lot of money and I would have been happy, but I wanted more. I saw other people, you know, and I was hearing other people on podcasts, cops, firemen, teachers, waitresses, I mean, principals, whatever, like they're doing multifamily. And I'm like, if multifamily is that attainable, I need to go find out how it's done. Right. So I would say go bigger, go, you know, faster. Also, you know, when I was the landlord for that three family, which I just sold last month after holding it for 24 months, I'm not a good landlord. Like, you need a good, solid property management company that can just stick to the standards that you dictate and don't basically budge, right? So if somebody had a sob story or something, I was like, oh, okay, you can be late for your rent, no problem, you know, whatever. But then like what happens is, you know, you keep on doing that. Then they tell the downstairs resident, hey, listen, if you tell this guy a sob story, you know, you're good to go. Like, and, you know, I kind of had to be a bad guy after a few months being like, listen, like 1 month, you know, 2 months, like, you know, I'll work with you, whatever. But like, I didn't have that commanding presence. I didn't have the systems in place. I didn't have the absolute standards kind of like written in stone. And I think that hurt me a little bit, you know, and I think it also made me realize that I don't really like being the landlord. I love real estate. It's obviously a proven asset class. But I think, you know, if you can underwrite your deals, even if you're doing a single family, your first property, and you can get a property management company in there, you know, and you can underwrite and still make that cash flow, I promise you, you know, unless you have all the time in the world and all the patience in the world, that property management is best left to the experts and you'll be way more profitable in the end.
For sure. I like what you mentioned about just kind of going big and maybe not a mistake, but missed opportunity. And I tell folks all the time, you know, they always ask me, should I start flipping? Should I start buying rentals? I'm like, you can start anywhere you want, but there's no such thing as a stepping stone. If you want to start buying skyscrapers, go hang out with people who are buying skyscrapers and you'll figure it out. You know, if you want to go flip, then go hang out with people that are flipping. You can do anything you want. What's your dream, right? How far do you want to go? So actually great, great point. You say, hey, it wasn't a mistake, but you felt like it was a missed opportunity.
Yes, sir.
I want to talk a little bit about, you just launched a podcast. You just told me you just went live. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So we're recording this on December 15th of 21, and we just went live today. It's called the Passive Income Brothers Podcast, and it's my brother Greg and I from Cityside Capital, and we decided to jump into the podcasting space. And so we're super excited about that.
That's awesome. So everybody out there, go check out the podcast, support it, give some reviews, check out Tim's social media. You'll be on the links below. Your website, what is your website, Tim?
So yeah, you can find me over at Cityside Cap. So CITYSIDECAP, citysidecap.com. My email address is just tim@citysidecap.com. I'm all over social. And yeah, that's a good start there.
Yeah, I have some of your links, your LinkedIn and some Facebook on the show notes. That's what I have. Now, Tim, this brings me to the best part of the show, which is my favorite part. And we're just about done. All right, sir. Cool. So I'm going to ask you three random questions. This is the Naked Truth Roulette. Got nothing to do with business. Just three random questions. Let's find out. Make sure that Tim's not a robot. He didn't get to 2,000 units in less than 2 years because he's a robot. All right. So let's roll. All right. First question for Tim. Okay. Perfect. What is the worst chore to do around the house?
Hands down, without question, is putting the laundry away back into the drawers.
Away. Now, how about throwing the laundry and turning it on? Is that cool?
No problem.
No problem.
Folding it, no problem.
It's awesome. I don't mind washing dishes. I actually enjoy washing dishes. I just don't like to put them away.
I don't like to put them away.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. All right, continue. Let's continue to the second question. Let's see what we got. All right, if you can pick any other time to live in, the future or the past, when would it be?
Wow, that is a great question. Something I've actually never even thought of before. You know, I'm a little bit of a history buff. And
what's your favorite era?
I would say like the 1800s, like back when things were just very simple, no electricity, riding on horses, farming, you know, like very, very simple life out in the country. So I would say like the mid 1800s.
Awesome. Mid 1800s. All right. Let's roll with the last question.
I got to tell you, I love this part of the podcast. I've never been a part of anything like this before. This is great.
Yeah, just three random questions. All right, let's see what we got on this one. This is the new one. Let's see. All right, there's a zombie apocalypse. There's three famous people you can take with you. Who would it be?
Oh, for the zombie apocalypse, I'll take Vin Diesel, Rambo. Vin Diesel, Rambo, and who else am I taking with me? Boy. Mike Tyson.
Oh, Tyson. All right. That's a strong team right there.
Right. You got to build that your team. It's just like real estate. You got to have a strong team.
It sure kind of beat mine. My wife's like, who would you take? I'm like, Gil Gadditch, Scarlett Johansson, and Jessica Alba. He's like, I didn't say why. I just said, you know, who would I take? Famous people. That's my last days on the world. But anyways, that's a good answer though. That's a great answer.
I love it.
All right, Tim, you survived the Naked Truth Roulette.
Love it.
Thank you so much for being a good sport and getting those questions answered. So I love to do that just because, you know, we talk about business, we talk about growing real estate, but at the end of the day, what people got to understand, right? And I know you try to tell people all the time, it's just people like you and them, right? We're no different. We're just talking to different people, hanging out in different places and, you know, taking action, right? There's really no difference from any of us out there.
No, at the end of the day, we're all trying to do the same thing, right? We're trying to, you know, elevate our lives, trying to, you know, elevate those around us, leave something of a legacy for our kids. And for sure. I think everybody kind of has the same stuff.
Yeah. Tim, thank you so much for being on the show. Happy holidays and a Merry Christmas. We got New Year's coming up. So I look forward to seeing you around in the circuit out there in the multifamily world meetup.
Yes, sir.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much. I'm happy to know who your host. Don't lose your shirt. I got a great gift for you guys. It is my underwriting calculator. That's what I use to underwrite multifamily for heavy value add. You're going to get a great discount because it takes a lot of work. And I have a calculator that'll help you underwrite something that's more stable, a prettier property with videos, not just multifamily, but I also have a calculator for you for mobile home parks, help you underwrite a value add or a property that's stable. I also have a calculator for you for self-storage. It'll help you evaluate a self-storage, value add, or self-storage that is already stable. And it has videos. We underwrite 50, 60 properties every single week. So my acquisitions team is pretty good at it. I want to give that to you for free for following me on the podcast, for being a loyal listener. I want to give that back to you. It's taking a lot of time and energy to put these together. So in that link, you'll see in the show notes, we'll give that away for free. It's actually a deal submission form. You can skip all that and go to the bottom and you'll see the calculators. But if you want to submit a deal to us so we can help you underwrite it, maybe we partner, feel free to use it. Make sure you analyze properly so you don't lose your shirt.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.